The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. If you'd like to listen to bonus episodes, go sign up to the Patreon. That's patreon.com. We f***ed it. Anyway, you'll find a way. Catamaran
home! I'm working on my hamstrings at the moment. I see these men with these flexible legs. Oh, of course I see the women with their flexible legs, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. I see these men on stage with their legs doing incredible leg maneuvers, and it gives them a whole facet of comedy. The leg. So much is done with the hand, so much done with the face and the mouth, but the leg, I'm not using the leg to its full potential. Because sometimes I'll try a kick on stage or something and then my back hurts for a week. So I've been very seriously attempting, even now, the elongation of what is an unfortunate hamstring. I've been mocked by physiotherapists in the past. I can feel that right in the bum, deep in the right bum. I have some of the worst hamstrings. It's always behind the knee. And I start to work on it. I work on it for a number of days. And then all of a sudden my back starts to, it's always in the back. And people say, well, you know, there are things you can do. There are proper maneuvers that will not hurt the back. And this time I'm doing a little of that. But mostly I'm just pounding ibuprofen to get through the pain. And I'm persisting with the leg stretches. That's the main thing that's changed since the last I've seen you here on the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. Work on the legs. And Wimbledog's been coming out. Wimbledog will make an appearance this week on the Patreon. The graphic novel, Wimbledog, it's coming out one page at a time. People have noticed that the dog hasn't appeared in Wimbledog yet. That's annoying me. You shouldn't have to hear it. I shouldn't have to deal with it. Wimbledog is out on the Patreon. It's coming out now. The dog's making an appearance this week. Thank you to Peter Bedgood. That's tremendous. Welcome to the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan, the podcast where I, James Donald Forbes McCann, am making a serious effort to improve leg flexibility here in Seattle. I just finished a show in Seattle. I think it was good. I'm never really happy with how the show's gone. The audience seemed pleased, and that's one of the important things. And then the night before, Ante, I was in Portland last night, and I caught the train today up to Seattle, and it was quite beautiful. Man, I walked to the train station, and it's been some time since I've seen someone smoking crack. And I did see that on the walk to the train station. It does seem like they're trying to clean up Seattle, Portland. Ah, whatever. The Pacific Northwest more generally. It's a beautiful part of the world. Seattle, I don't think anyone ever told me this before, but it really does remind me of Melbourne. I'm in the homosexual district of Seattle. Lots of rainbow flags on the street. You know, some cities you have a rainbow crossing. Here they have about 50 rainbow crossings. It does strike me as unusual that the LGBTQIA+ community does want people to trample on their flag. I think of the Japanese Catholic missionaries who were executed if they refused to walk on an icon of our Lord. You know, we're trampling on something not usually a sign of respect, but here, with the gay flag, the rainbow flag, please, have a step. Tread on me, as the common inversion goes. So much to talk about. So much has been happening. I'm on the road. I've started posting clips on the Instagram because I was told it was necessary. And sadly, it works. I was really hoping it wouldn't work. But I took clips that other people had been posting of my stand-up that I hadn't been posting myself. And within a week of doing, I did 5 clips. And we got like 14,000, some weird number. 20% more Instagram. It's like, oh, bugger. If I do that, you can have a career if you do that. If you got clips that people like and you put them on the internet, you are allowed to have a career. And very quickly sell out your 2 Pacific Northwest shows. So that's nice. Thank you for everybody who was involved in that. This, I think, will be the last time that I go on the road without an opener. I didn't know how financially this would work. I didn't know how well I would sell. Feeling that in the strings. So I didn't bring an opener this time. I'll be bringing an opener in future. I've had a conversation with a couple of the people at the mothership. Necessary to have someone you travel with, because otherwise you get sad. I'm alone in a hotel room. I didn't wear this on stage. I put this on to feel happier for the podcast. I will be dressing like this in the future for the podcast. Businessman. It occurs to me that I'm a businessman, and I'll be... You know, you don't see... Well, actually, nowadays you do see quite a lot of businessmen wearing, especially in this part of the world, the tech side of things. A lot of people dressed up, Mark Zuckerberg with his gold chains, and entrepreneurs in turtlenecks and that sort of thing. But I'll be wearing, if not a suit, because I think to get a well-fitting suit, you either need to find one at an op shop with someone who has dyed in your size. Not easy. Much easier to mix and match. Separates, I believe they call it on Project Runway. And it's, I'm sorry, it's been so long between podcasts. Podcasts have been coming out on the Patreon for the Patreon people, but I know some people are too poor for the Patreon. So, I mean, I've just been on the road and getting ready to be on the road and setting up our home. And just grinding away at it. Watching Eurovision with great interest. Oh, writing some poems. Would you like to hear some of my new poems? I think you might like to hear some of my newer poems. May as well read you my poems. What else am I going to do other than read you my poems? Play some of my new music? Yeah, you'll be getting that later on. Don't you worry about that. I think the new book of poems is called Disquieting Levels of Egg. And I've been thinking a lot about the... just what the next year looks like. Comedy clubs are great. People are nice. You meet new people. They see you do comedy. But I think after I put the next special out, when I need a little time to develop the next lot of things, I think it's finally time to get the family in a Winnebago and do a tour of independent bookstores. And that's how people will see me. I'll go to independent bookstores with my new book of poems, tentatively titled Disquieting Levels of Egg. It's probably going to be called something different. But I thought, wouldn't that be nice? You know, just to 50, if we can get 50 people out to a small bookstore and people have a little glass of wine and smoking out front. And then I get up and I say, here are some poems, everybody. Ha, 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 ha. You know, and I go off in the evenings and do that, and during the day, I mean, at the moment, my plan is to just do this on the West Coast because it's so beautiful here. We start in San Diego. We go all the way up to Whitehorse. Probably Toronto. In a Winnebago. And it doesn't have to be Winnebago, just a big driving car. Hopefully, my wife can drive by this time. And we'll just take a couple of weeks to see this part of the country. Go to the Redwoods. Go to a lot of little independent bookstores. I mean, I can do that. That's the sort of thing I think I'd like to do. I think I've been talked out of van life. You want to hear the poems. Well, I wrote an introduction that's not going to stick, so I'll read that to you. I'm going to get rid of this. It says, Dearest reader, I have written this, my fourth book of poems, for one reason and one reason only, because I have not yet seized power. Had I already seized power, I would have had no time to write a book of poems. I would be busy reorganizing society and meeting with various functionaries. In one sense, the sense in which I have had the time to write this book, it is good that I have not yet seized power. But in several other senses, it is a terrible shame. Poverty, angst, traffic, obesity, heartbreak, fatigue, erectile dysfunction, bad sleep, faithlessness, environmental mismanagement, winter, addiction, the absence of miracles, mortality, chafing, divorce, hunger, sciatica, blindness, watching a movie that doesn't really go anywhere, betrayal, lactose intolerance, death. These are but symptoms of the disease. The disease is that I have not yet seized power. May these poems bring you comfort in these trying pre-revolutionary times. Yours, James Donald Force McCann. And I decided that was rather a little impersonal and boastful. So that exists here on the podcast exclusively. I'll read you a little poem. This one's called First Draft Rodney Dangerfield. I'll tell ya, I get all the respect. My wife, she's beautiful. I can't do a Rodney Dangerfield impression. I tell ya, I get all the respect. My wife, she's beautiful, and she cherishes my powerful sensual body. And behold, my son, blood of my blood, my biological product beyond all doubt. We both come from a long line of men who got respect. My father was respected, and his father before him. It's a poem about respect, ostensibly. I'll scroll to the bottom, get to the new poems. New poems. None of these are good. I don't like any of my poems. Sell it, Jimmy. You don't need to eat your own cum to know yourself. That's quite a long poem. Everyone says thank you and everyone says please. Anyway. Some men are eggs. This is potentially the last line of this poem is disquieting levels of egg. Perhaps we could all say it together when we get there. Some men are eggs. Some men are raw eggs. Other men are hard-boiled eggs. Some men look as though they're eggs, but they are actually egg-shaped rocks. Look, maybe all men are eggs, and I am being an egg-shaped rock about it. Some men are eggs that do not look at all like eggs until you drop them, and then they're obviously eggs. Way too much egg. Disquieting levels of egg. That's a poem I wrote about when I noticed that men are eggs. How long am I supposed to stretch this out? When I pull my feet together, it hurts more. Ladies and gentlemen, I tell you, I don't like to go on and on about it, but I've been a little glum. I've been a little glum. And I think I'm coming out of it now, but there was just a couple weeks there where I would just be a bit glum. And I think it's that now that I'm lactose intolerant, I can't have a Kit Kat to feel better. I was never so glum that a Kit Kat couldn't do some good work. But now it's like booze or go for a walk. All my favorite snacks have milk in them. I think genuinely it's just sort of the American experience. What is the American experience and what is articulate sad men? But, you know, that just feeling like the world's false and shallow. Then I sort of snapped out a little bit when we got a new pope. And then the more I find out about this pope, the more I like him. Chicago trad pope? Maybe. If you're noticing that this video looks better than normal, maybe it looks worse than normal because I've stuffed it up, but sweet Tommy Pope over at Stuff Island, when we finished that podcast, he let me borrow one of their old cameras. So And then I, you know, it was incredible, very kind. So this is, that's why I was able to read off of my telephone, because I'm not shooting it on the telephone. I'm shooting it on a camera. Crazy. Huge step forward. Then I, you know, I had to go and buy a lens and batteries and stuff, and it ended up costing quite a lot of money, but not as much as if I'd had to pay for the camera as well. So I thank you, Tommy Pope, very, very much. These legs have to come down. We can't leave the legs. I mean, how long have the legs been up for? As long as I've been doing the podcast. 14 minutes of leg agony. It's weird doing show. I just put the feet back down. Put them back together again. Nah, I'm getting pins and needles. That can't be good. Can that be good? That's not even a real stretch. I spoke to a lovely lady called Grace, who used to be a figure skater. Yeah. Oh, no. I felt that in the back. Wow. Unpleasant. Ooh. Whoa. And she said my problem might not be hamstrings. It might be the TI joint, the TI something, like the wrapper. I might be getting that wrong, but because I feel it behind the knee, it might be that. But we're just going to keep working. Every day, I tell you, I've had such tight legs. I've already said the word disquieting. I've had frighteningly tight legs. I think it causes all sorts of problems. And I come from a long line of men with tight legs. I think, well, I don't know if my grandfather on my father's side had tight legs, as he only had one leg. He was an amputee. And I suspect that that leg actually got pretty flexible because he had to do everything with that leg. I don't know. Certainly the other leg wasn't anything down beyond the knee to stretch the hamstring. So I assume that one he didn't have. Maybe, I don't know. We never discussed his amputation. We didn't talk much about his time. We spoke more about his time in the war than what it was like being an amputee. Mac. It's just, you know, it's obviously not great to have one leg, but I do find it. I could always say that about him. I was like, my grandpa's got one leg. And people go, what? You know, what? And it's nice to have a sentence that you can say that does. It's interesting to have a grandpa with one leg, you know? My dad remembers going to the beach and seeing his father jump, you know, up to the water and go for a swim. It's nice to have, you know, there are so many sentences that you can say that get people's attention, and they're sad sentences. You know, they're unhappy. I was molested. I molested somebody. You know, these get the attention. But something good and wholesome, like my grandpa had one leg. That's what it's about in conversation. You want that in. You want that grandpa has one leg in. And there are others, I think. Like, I was dropped on my head as a child. People don't seem as interested in that as relieved. They go, yes. No, I was... Greg's with all I gets in. Big surgical scar. I'd like a sin again.
Woo! Almost heaven. West Virginia. Blue Ridge Mountains.
Shenandoah River. Oh, man. Yeah, when I took my legs down before, I felt that very much in the lower back. I think a lot of the flexibility issues I'm having here are lower back related. Are you a physiotherapist watching this? Will you help me with my back? Why won't you help me with my back? Ooh. 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 I don't know if you can hear that, but this is... Ooh. Ooh. That only vibrates at that. This lampshade. I don't know if you can hear it. What are the odds that the one note that I would have picked would be the one note at which this resonates? Whatever the hell that is. I've been reading a real boring, dull... Oh, I'll show you. I've been reading this... I got it at a bookstore. I thought it would be interesting. 19th century Germany, politics, culture, and society, 1780 to 1918. And it's a series of academic... Yeah, it's like a business to be university presses, professors. It's probably a university press as well, for example. John Brueli is Emeritus Professor of Nationalism and Ethnicity at the London School of Economics. You know, a bunch of guys have written one chapter. Robert Lee is formerly Chaddock Professor of Economic and Social History. Christopher Clark is Regius Professor of History at St. Catherine's College, Cambridge. Roger Chickering taught from 1968 to 1993 at the University of Oregon. I was just in Oregon. Funny. Ute Fervet is director of the Max Planck Institute for Human Development in Berlin and the head of its Center for the History of Emotions. Weak. Anyway, so I thought that's a good way to, you know, really get it, really get into the nitty gritty of 19th century Germany, something that many times I've said I don't know a lot about 19th century Germany. So I thought, good to know and read about 19th century. It's so dull. I think it's because it's professors writing for a, dare I say, mass audience, but I thought they're... It's just like, they write like machines. They write this horrible academic style that I remember writing in, where you're just sort of like slotting the words into a sentence formulation. What do you mean, James? Give me an example. Fine. I'll go to the conclusions. Right, this is from chapter 2, the German lands before 1815. Heinrich Heine, great name. That one seems to resonate as well. Heinrich Heine wrote that the Germans had become patriots and defied Napoleon because their princes ordered them to. That fails to do justice to the strength of anti-Napoleonic sentiment in many parts of Germany by 1813 to 14. But there was no national uprising or national crusade. There remained a world of difference between the nationalism of some intellectuals and the nation they aspired to lead. It's always paragraphs like that. Like, on the one hand, you know, people are saying this, but it would be wrong to say something like this. The answer is something in the middle, a little more nuanced than this and this. Just over and over again. That's the sort of sentence you write in, because they're evaluating a bunch of different historians and they want to say, well, see, I must be reasonable because I disagree with people over here and over here. And that puts me here in the sensible position surrounded by loons. This is how academics and centrist politicians speak and act. And it's unbearable. Because I remember having to write like that at university, and I'm sure they really know their stuff, but writing in that style, I am so distrustful of people who write like that, rather than, you know, like, there's got to be a better way to do it. Like, the really influential academic writers do not write like that. Foucault doesn't write like that. Foucault's not going, on the one hand, people say this. On the other hand, people say this. And I say, no, Foucault, you open up Foucault and he says, is it wrong for a grown man to get interfered with by a child on a farm? I don't think so. I think that's a good time. And you go, while I disagree strongly with what you're saying, Marcel, it's a more exciting sentence than anything in this old, you know. Friedrich Nietzsche is not going, well, the continental philosophers, they say this, and the ancient philosophers, they say that, and the British, and the Kant, and all these other things. But I am in the middle. No, he says, death scares me, and God is dead, and I am a Superman who recurs infinitely. Yeah, I'm covered in poop, and my sister has to clean me up. That's what you're getting. I am dynamite. I am a hammer. That's academic writing, as far as I'm concerned. I guess narrative history, or as it used to be called, history. You're like, Herodotus is telling a narrative, and he's incorporating sources, and he's saying these guys and these guys, but he's really, he's trying to let you know, not just that he's a smarty pants, you know? He's trying to let you know that guys from Sudan have black cum. He reports that like it's a fact. Oh. And then I got Salinger. I'm working through Salinger's short stories, and they're great. Perfect day for banana fish. You know, that sort of thing. And I'm rewatching The Young Pope. I'm watching that with my wife, and it's so great. It's so... All right. This is how I'm watching The Young Pope. Because the first time you watch... It's funny. Rewatching a thing, the stuff that grabs you the first time, sometimes you can ignore the second time around. Example, I watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon on a flight, and I haven't seen that movie in a long time. And the first time I watched, you know, first however many times, as a young man watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, all I could think the whole time was, oh, they're flying. These ladies are strong. She's got a sword. You know, just taken in by all that stuff. But watching it this time, it's like, oh, this is a very delicate story about a promising young woman being pulled in all sorts of different directions who doesn't know what to do. And I, beautiful story. Why does she jump off a bridge? Is something lost in translation there? Anyway, I'm rewatching The Young Pope this time around. And so all the stuff about him being like a nasty trad and wearing the clothes and stuff, it doesn't shock the same way that it does this time around. And instead, what I'm getting out of The Young Pope is that his saintliness extends beyond the doing of miracles. What I really am enjoying about The Young Pope is that his every conversation he has with somebody, with maybe some exceptions once you get to episode 7 and he's working through his difficulties, he seems to tell people what they really need for their salvation. He's firm when he's got to be firm. He's tender when he's going to be tender. It's as a study of pastoralism, you know, of shepherding, of meeting people where they are and helping them go forward from the position that they're in. It's wonderful. And a lot of the drama comes from people overhearing what he's saying to other people on their journey. And they think, oh, it's not a good thing to say, because it wouldn't be a good thing to say to them. That's not the way he talks to them. But he talks to these other people very differently. So if you rewatch The Young Pope, I started thinking about it that way because in Bride's Head, so that every character might be saved. There's a possibility that every character in their own way is saved in Bride's Head. You know, we're all on a different journey, blah, 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 same destination, blah, 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 all that good stuff. But it's, yeah, viewing The Young Pope through the sanctification of the individual characters and lineage Christ. I mean, this is what Christ does. Christ really talks to different people in different ways. And how does he talk to me? I hope it's not as a stern disciplinarian. That would make me uncomfortable. I hope I get one of the tender, you're doing your best chats. Oh, which is, probably means that's not what I need. I need a firm slap on the wrist. As a child, I remember thinking that if I believed, an angel would appear to me, or God would appear to me, and I would be able to have a vision if I decided that I wanted to believe. And I remember thinking, that seems scary, and I don't want that to happen. But it was like standing at a threshold, and I thought, I could do that now. If I wanted to, I could do that. And I decided not to, because I'm a coward. Now, that's probably a nonsense, you would say. And yet it stays with me. Hey, James Donald Forbes McCann catamaran plan. We'll keep you updated on the hammies. I've been doing this one. I don't know if this will be in focus, but I've been doing like put my leg up on like a high thing and then just trying to wah! Oh no. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. And then you see, I take the other leg and I put it up somewhere high. This is probably totally the wrong thing to do. I feel that everywhere. I feel that everywhere. 10, 9, 8. Oh, 7, 6, 5, 4. 3, 2, 1. And if I just keep doing that, if I just keep doing things of this nature, will the hamstrings loosen? Whap! And then I'll be doing so many glorious leg maneuvers in the future. Thank you for watching this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. I'm on tour next month. I got a couple of weeks off, and then I'm really on tour in June. I'm all over the shop. I love you. I miss you. I want you. I need you. Catamaran ha. Goodbye.